This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminem. Before we start, again, just a quick little reminder, get your application in now to be a speaker at FIX 20. That application deadline is coming up really soon on December 31st, so don't delay. Next up on our FIX 19 content, we have a talk from Dr. Sayan Farooq. She's an assistant professor of emergency medicine and global health faculty at Columbia University, and she also serves as an advisor to the Minister of Health of Ethiopia on strategic planning and emergency care. She has had truly incredible experiences in her work and shares them in her FIX talk, Woman Leaders in a Man's House. Enjoy.
So today, I'm going to start with a confession, but please don't throw a rock at me. I have a confession. So I never thought gender inequity was an issue until recently. I never thought I would attend, let alone speak, on a platform called Feminem. However, I had two rude awakenings, one as a child and one as an adult. Before I tell you these two stories, let me give you a bit of a context to ameliorate the judgment I'm feeling. Even though I was born and raised in a very patriarchal society in Ethiopia, as you can see, I was born into a gender-balanced home. As the last born of the house, I was the equalizer. Two boys and two girls. I know what you're thinking, looking at the gender gap, the age gap, and thinking, oh, she was an accident, huh? No. My mother tells me how she tried for years and that she had me. And my sister, she tells me how she prayed for her little sister because she was outnumbered by the boys. I came out as the equalizer, and of course, I was surrounded by a strong woman like my mother, a working mother, my sister, my great aunt and aunt who excelled in their profession and in the sciences. At school, I played with the boys and competed with the boys and girls. So for me, gender inequity did not exist. However, when I was about 12 years old, I was exposed to something through TV. One day, I came home from school, sat down in front of the TV, and my favorite program called Close Up used to air on Wednesdays. And on Close Up, they go to different parts of the country and explore how people lived. I found it very fascinating to learn about the different cultures within Ethiopia. That day, I saw a group of women celebrating. They looked like they were celebrating something. And they took this little girl that looked maybe about 8 or 9 into a room and a hut. And one lady took out a dirty blade. And some of the women looked like they were consoling this girl. Next thing I saw on TV was a gush of blood coming down her legs. As they cut down what I later learned to be her clitoris. This was a practice of female genital cutting in front of my eyes. The girl, reeling with pain, they put her legs together and tied it with a rope until the bleeding stopped. Of course, for me, as a 12-year-old, watching that in front of TV happening in Ethiopia, I was horrified and terrified, thinking it would happen to me. Of course, that night, I cried for hours, until my sister and my mother arrived, and of course, they couldn't believe that I actually sat down and watched the whole program, and they couldn't believe such a program was broadcasted. But I was consoled that such practice was stopped in my family by the power of an education and exposure my grandparents had. Because of that, my mother or her sisters were not victimized, so it stopped. I was saved by such grace. At school the next day, the group of my friends sat down and talked about what we saw on TV. And again, same story. The cycle actually broke to the power of education, and none of us were victims. But their mothers and their grandmothers have been victimized. For the very first time in my life, I thought maybe the world is not fair to girls and women. But with a complete selfish attitude of a child, I said to myself, oh, what happened to me, so why worry about it? And I moved on, until many, many years later. Even after I moved to the US, through high school, undergraduate, graduate school, medical school and residency through fellowship, I was surrounded by strong, badass women and also by strong role models. So for me, I always thought gender inequity did not exist. The truth is, even after I moved to the US, I was shocked more by the racial disparity, the xenophobia, more so the gender inequity. And for that, I think my brother Osborne yesterday and Dr. Yvette McQueen touched upon it yesterday, and it's a complete other topics which I won't get into. But afterwards, for the very first time, after I started going back to Ethiopia as an adult, I got exposed to different things that made me change my views. I went back to Ethiopia after so many years as a medical student, and it was about the time when the first emergency medicine residency started in Ethiopia. So imagine practicing in a place where people did not know that your specialty existed. You call up a consult and say, hey, I'm Dr. So-and-so from the emergency department. I'm the emergency resident. And people on the other side are like, who are you? Emergency department? So is that surgery or medicine? So that was the kind of attitude people had. Some of my inspirations were these two women, Dr. Finot and Alinta. They were the early graduates of emergency medicine residency in Ethiopia. Every day, they advocated for their patients and for their newly found passion, emergency medicine. These two women were making history, and they did it graciously and elegantly. Despite the chauvinism in medicine, they rose above the challenges. Remember coming back and telling my partner then, I have to find a way to support and to continue to work with these two women. So like many of you know in this room that know me, every break and vacation I had, I continued to go back to Ethiopia to volunteer there at their hospitals or at the Federal Ministry of Health. These two women are now the movers and shakers of emergency medicine. They have high-level director position within their institution. Again, seeing them succeed gave me a false sense of reprieve from the oppression of gender inequity. About a year and a half ago, I joined the ministry advisory group. I was recruited and appointed to be an advisor to the Minister of Health of Ethiopia on Emergency Care and Strategy Partnership. It was an exciting position, but at the same time, I was also faced with lots of challenges, personally and professionally. Of course, around the same time was when the new Prime Minister appointed over 50% of his cabinet to be females. And then, another week later, a very exciting thing happened. He appointed the first woman president in Ethiopia's modern history. And then another week later, he appointed the first president of the Supreme Court Justice. And of course, all over social media, hashtag gender balanced leadership dominated. And some people on Twitter and social media appointing heads of state and ministers now normalizes women as decision makers in everyday society. Around the same time, it was very exciting to see all this excitement. But then, a few weeks later, the scathing and loathing attacks started against this newly appointed woman. Well, the women got the power they sought for. Let's see what they're going to be able to achieve. Or let's see how long they'll last, as if their failure was inevitable. This kept on bothering me. For me, I thought maybe I'm just too Americanized or Westernized, and this is the reality in Ethiopia now. I just have to accept it. But one thing changed it for me. I was traveling with a group of advisors. At that point, I was the only female advisor. I got a call from one of the organizers as we were about to attend this really high-level meeting. And he called and said, I'm sorry, Doc, but all the hotels are overbooked, and I have to move you 20 miles away. He just took that woman, one woman, to put 20 miles away out of the whole advisors, 20 miles away. as if I did not matter, as if I did not belong with the group. To my disbelief, he did not think I would be attending the high-level decision-making meetings. I felt his disregard over the phone, and I felt so humiliated having to explain my role over the phone to him next to my male colleagues. Of course, I was bothered. I was angry, like Michelle said yesterday. And again, just like the trepidation I felt as a 12-year-old, I tried to hide it under the rug and move on. But I'm an adult this time, so I had to face it. So instead of bitching and moaning to my husband and my brother and my sister, I'm like, what do I do about it? So what did I do? I gathered a few of the sisters from the ministry, and I decided to first ask the question, are you angry? Of course, it was yes, 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 overwhelming yes. I'm like, great, let's do something about it. So we decided to put this leadership forum for the women, so in that way, and the retreat program, so we can discuss our triumphs and challenges in our own safe space, and come up with solutions so we can inform our male colleagues. And the real magic happens when we collaborate with our male counterparts to confront topics like gender-based violence and workplaces, and also implicit biases. And as a group, we create solutions in building a gender-sensitive environment and fostering women leadership. And the results have been overwhelmingly positive, and everybody's been looking forward towards these sessions. At the end of my talk, to the men, I appeal to the men in the room. As a country, the reality might be what you see on the left side, and we've worked for equality for the past 4 decades. But now, as we strive and work towards equity and hopefully for liberation, you can be the building block for equity. And I appeal to the men in the room to help us get to liberation. What will help us get to liberation is how you modify your shared responsibility at home with your wife, how you treat your female colleagues at work, and how you foster women leadership. If not for you, do it for your sisters. If not for you, do it for your daughters. If not for you, do it for your granddaughters. You see, and then I also want to say, like what Hannah said yesterday, before I forget, your mere presence in this room for all of you guys, it tells me that you're privileged, that you can also be the building block for equity. Find your voice. Find the pedestal to use your voice. Say it loud and clear. I've been privileged and honored to be part of this wave of transformation in Ethiopia. It's truly an exciting time. The women leaders are met with resistance, but they rise and glide. The women leaders might be in the man's house, but they're the real force of change. The woman leader is that girl on TV that I saw as a 12-year-old. Like every woman in Ethiopia, her resilience keeps her going. The woman leader is me here confessing, despite, and using my voice, and despite thinking I was voiceless for years. I recognize my shortcomings as an individual, as a group. We experience our awakening, and as a generation, we rewrite our future. Thank you.